So we like to say that it's one third self-love guide, one third compassion training, and one third dating advice. And so tonight we're going to be taking that philosophical and practical look into the variety of relationship, which naturally takes us into the conversation about polyamory. So it's going to be a very interesting conversation. If you have any questions or personal experience that you want to call in and share about, feel free to do that. Our number is 895-1114. We can also be reached on the Facebook page. It is going to be myself, Tammy, Julian, Emily Rose, and Megan Manzanita Sullivan, a dear friend and experienced lover, joining us. We got laughter in the back. I mean, we're all experienced lovers, right? But maybe more so than mothers. Maybe. Nobody can hear you on the, except me. So the first song we're going to start out with is the polyamory song. So stay tuned, and we're going to get ready and talking soon.
I heard a woman talking, and to me what she said just made sense. She was lamenting the state of affairs, how some people can be so dense. She said she had three wonderful children, two girls and their little brother. And nobody gave her problems for loving each child as much as the other. But they'll say you are better, perhaps you are madder, at least you should stay undercover. Your mind must be bare if you would dare to think you can love more than one lover. I like Italian espresso, but I also dig French wine. And now and then that BC bud leaves me feeling fine. I like to get a buzz sometimes, I like sobriety. Most people understand this, they also like variety. But they'll say you are better, perhaps you are madder, at least you should stay undercover. Your mind must be bare if you would dare to think you can love more than one lover. Well, I like the redwood forests, but the desert makes me wanna sing. And those little Irish villages when the church bells ring. I like to busk in Boston and hang out in the cafes in Berlin. I like lots of different places and nobody tells me it's a sin. But they'll say you are better, perhaps you are madder, at least you should stay undercover. Your mind must be bare if you would dare to think you can love more than one lover.
Welcome back to Love in the 21st Century. As promised, we are going to be talking about the variety of relationships. And this is a topic that we have attempted to talk about, I think, on several different occasions. And the different people that were able to potentially come were learning about the definitions and different ways in which variety of relationships and polyamory can be looked at. And so I'm really excited to have Megan Manzanita Sullivan, a dear friend of mine, join us, who has read extensively and experienced and lives a lifestyle of her choice. So to come and share on the air about these different varieties and these different terms, because it's not just a blanket term that's oftenly thrown around and covering one type of relationship. So tonight's an opportunity to really get some education behind what we're talking about on the different types of relationships, and also a little bit of firsthand experience of what it's like. So thank you so much, Megan, for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I have to say I'm really excited about this show. There's so many different shapes that relationship can take, and Megan looks really schooled on it all. She's got all these notes here.
She's going to school us. I'm really excited about this. So maybe we can just start with a general term of what polyamory is, and then maybe we can go into some of the different types of relationship that maybe sometimes get grouped into that.
Yeah. Before we go into that, I just want to say, first of all, that for me, where I've come to with the journey of relationships and polyamory is that I'm trying to live a life based on my values, and that includes relationships and living relationships rooted in what my values are. So as we're going into all the different kind of styles of relationship and the terms for them, I just like to come back to keep that in awareness that I want us all to pick our relationship styles based on what is most in alignment with our values.
So there's not like one right or wrong.
Yeah. I mean, we can talk, there's questions of ethics, especially, you know, if there's two people whose values don't match up and they're not being upfront about that, but the values themselves are very personal. But to come back to the question of what polyamory is, probably debatable, but I guess in the broadest sense, poly, it's kind of a mishmash word, because poly is, I think, a Greek root that means more than one, and amory is a Latin root that means love. So it's more than one love. It's saying multiple loves.
In multiple languages.
In multiple languages. And so polyamory is, I mean, in some ways you could say it's non-monogamy, although there's other things that aren't monogamy that aren't really the same as polyamory, like swinging, which is not so focused on the love aspect because it's more focused on the sex aspect and maybe is more casual and not as much about developing primary bonds with people, emotional bonds with people, and having that intimacy.
Do you know where the term polyamory first started being used?
You know what? Maybe the next time after we take a break, I can answer that question for you, because I have a book out in the other room that has the first essay that was widely publicized that used the term polyamory, and I'll be able to go get that and find out who wrote that.
Awesome, because Emily just briefly mentioned that comment, like, that it's in two different languages, and so I don't know that many people know that, you know. So when we're talking about this term polyamory, which I've always heard is, you know, a reference to a more tribal or indigenous way of being in a relationship, that the term actually doesn't originate from one source, that word in particular. So
yeah,
it's interesting to think about.
I have a book that claims that it has this essay that was the first use of it, but I'm not sure I entirely trust that was, like, it might have arisen in multiple places, but it is one of the earlier uses of that word specifically. Of course, the practice of polyamory, or the practice of non-monogamy, is much older than the use of the term.
Mm-hmm. I can see just how much we have to jump into here, but just really quickly, have you noticed, you personally, or have you noticed a rise in the popularity of polyamory in recent years?
I have. I'm not sure how much that is an objective rise, or if it's a rise of my own exposure to other people identifying as polyamorous, but it certainly seems that way. I think that this stuff tends to spread earlier and faster in more populated areas, like in big cities, and just there's a different dating scene in larger metropolitan areas, but I'm even seeing it come to Chico now, where more people are saying that they're poly, you know, on, like, people's OkCupid profiles. Now you can say that you're monogamous or non-monogamous, and you can say strictly or mostly as qualifiers to either of those words. But a lot of people will use the word polyamory in their profiles on dating websites so that people can search for that word and find each other.
I look forward to the day where Facebook gives that as an option, or like maybe takes away that it's complicated and then replaces, I don't know.
Yeah, the interesting thing about Facebook is you can say you're in an open relationship, but only with one person.
Right.
So, and that kind of gets into some of the traditional ways that people have practiced polyamory and some of the ways, other ways that are becoming, I think, increasingly popular and people are becoming more aware of. So I think that one of the traditional ways that people have practiced poly, a lot of people say poly for short, is a sort of a hierarchical way where you have a primary partner and then you might have secondary partners or even sometimes tertiary partners. And that's a way of describing, on one level, it's kind of a neutral term to just describe how much time someone spends with you or what kind of things you do together. Like somebody you own a house with or have kids with might be more likely to be a primary partner. But it's also been used to describe who gets priority in decision making. And I think that's the paradigm that something like the Facebook open relationship option has, is like, oh, this is my primary partner and then everybody else is like secondary. And a lot of people are moving away from that and saying they don't want to prioritize and say one person's more important than the other, just like we don't necessarily do that in friendships. I mean, like, I might have one friend who I really like to go thrift store shopping with and one that we like to go on really long hikes, but it doesn't mean that one of them's more important than the other. They're just different.
When does it move from, you know, where's the line, like where you're dating multiple people versus in a polyamorous relationship with multiple people?
I think that really depends on individuals within the relationships, and a lot of it is really sometimes difficult negotiating, especially when it comes to navigating people who are just coming into trying out non-monogamous relationship styles. I think the difference between just dating multiple people from a monogamous point is that some people might think, oh, well, I might be dating multiple people, but I'm hopefully going to figure out which one of them I'm most compatible with and then stop dating the others and settle down with this one person and get on their relationship escalator. Which I'd love to talk about the relationship escalator a little more if we have time, but, and then sort of a more solo poly approach, which is what I was identifying with as for a while and still mostly do. There's not so much that priority placed on trying to get on the relationship escalator with a specific person and ultimately like drop everybody else because you realize they weren't compatible with you.
Well, like, I know that, like, my brother is openly dates multiple people and wants to keep it at just that level. Like, he's not mm-hmm. looking for a relationship, per se. And so, so it's interesting because I guess when I think about that, I think about, like, dating multiple people like that. Yes, it can be about connection, but maybe there is more of a sexual, like, slant mm-hmm. to it versus getting in relationship with multiple people. And polyamory has to do with love versus mm-hmm. just sex. Because, I mean, you can be polyamorous with many people and only have sex with one person, right?
Totally. That's like, I've been hearing this phrase more. People talk about having platonic life partners, like someone who you don't have a sexual or romantic relationship with, but who is really important to you and in a way fulfills some of the purposes and needs that traditionally a romantic partner has, of just being a consistent, stable support person in your life mutually.
I think that there are probably, you know, a lot of listeners have a wide range of responses to the subject matter here. And I think some people are like, wow, that's left field. That's totally outside my comfort zone. There's no way. No way I could have anything to do with that. And then I think there are other people that go, oh, that's right up my alley. That sounds something like I want. And then there might be people that wonder, like, that just sounds exhausting. Emotionally, energetically, like, I'm in a they say I'm in a relationship with one person. That is insane enough. Like, the idea of compounding that further just sounds, to some people at the outset, dramatic, you know, a weighing of, you know, is it worth that kind of effort?
Time consuming, energy consuming,
and all of that. So what would your response be to that you know, some people have trepidation about the subject matter in their own relationship, and some of that centers on maybe just feeling like it'd be overwhelming.
Yeah, I would say if the idea of a polyamorous or non-monogamous relationship sounds overwhelming to you, then that might be a sign that it's not for you. One way to think about these different relationship styles is about, like, just as strategies of what works best for us. Another way to think about them is as orientations. And for me, I think that I've kind of always had somewhat of a polyamorous orientation. I remember as a kid reading stories where a character, maybe the primary character, had two love interests, and then at some point she was forced to choose between them. And I was always so sad and was like, why can't she just love them both and be with them both?
Whoa. So you feel like from a childhood perspective, this was something you wanted to share?
Pretty early on. Yeah, maybe not as a kid, but definitely by the time I think I reached puberty, I was like having that attitude towards, you know, media representations of like somebody having feelings for two people and being forced to choose one of them by cultural norms, and just like how tragic that felt to me. So
that's interesting, because there's so many, I mean, by no means all, but there's a lot of young ladies, you know, women that grow up saturated in the environment of the Prince Charming, right? And that there can be one and only one. And so to hear your experience of coming at it from a different place and sort of feeling, I think it sounds like, a little heartbroken for having to make a choice.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. And I can see where that would be an orientation-related way of looking at this. It actually makes me curious about your story. How did you come to start, I mean, obviously, apparently from childhood?
When I was about 15, I read The Fifth Sacred Thing, which shows some very functional, healthy, non-monogamous relationships, and I really connected with the characters in that book, and it felt so normal to me, and that was immediately what I wanted. And then, yeah, The Fifth Sacred Thing is by Starhawk, and she writes a lot of nonfiction, but that's one of her fiction books, and I really enjoyed that, and it really, I think, helped set the tone for the kind of relationships that I really wanted to seek out. The only problem maybe with the way that polyamory has been portrayed in some early media portrayals, and I was just hearing this criticism of Robert Heinlein's Stranger in a Strange Land too, is that some authors have portrayed it in this very idealistic way, where the people involved don't really seem to communicate about things and don't really have conflicts, and everything is just sort of hunky-dory without, and the characters in these settings live in a culture where that's already established as the norm, and it's not always possible to just make that shift instantly, or like it really isn't possible to make that shift instantly. And so, you know, we live in a culture where monogamy is the norm, and people, unless people have been exposed to these kind of ideas, they'll just assume that anything outside of that is unethical, and that if two people seem to be involved with each other, that you should assume that you shouldn't get involved and don't interfere with that relationship. It's, even if you don't know that they're monogamous, it's just assumed that they are. And that in that way, that orientation, that style of relationship is privileged. And so people who have a different orientation to the kind of relationships that they want to be in have to kind of navigate those waters carefully.
What is the phrase? I've heard it, and I don't know it exactly, where, you know, polyamory, how the phrase that refers to people that are in monogamous two-person relationships.
Dyads.
Dyads, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, when talking about this, it's, you know, there seems to be a trend or a leaning that suggests that, you know, polyamory and various relationship forms are like the wave of the future, a growing trend that, look out, here it comes. The next 20, 30 years, everything's going to change. And, you know, I've been in social situations where, you know, somebody's in a multiple partner relationship and they reference dyad relationships as, oh, dyads. Like, they
like
just haven't
figured,
they haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah.
So what within the polyamory community, where do people fall on that? You know, what's your experience there?
I would say that it's mixed. There's some people that have that attitude of this is the wave of the future. And I think that as we become more liberated around choosing the types of relationships that we want, I think we will see more people choosing non-monogamy. But I don't think that that means it's for everybody. I think that for whatever reasons, there's always going to be people who want to be in an exclusive monogamous relationship, whether that's for their whole lives or for part of their life. Maybe at a certain part, you know, I had someone tell me a while ago, someone who I know isn't committed to monogamy as a moral stance, but who just said for practical reasons that that was what they were seeking at that time in their life. And I think that as, you know, I read this article the other day that was responding to the Ashley Madison information breakout, bust, whatever, that was saying, oh no, watch out poly community with this information leak, we're going to have a bunch of new inexperienced open relationships heading our way to the poly community because they're going to realize monogamy wasn't working for them. But really the ultimate point the article was making is that when people can be honest about the type of relationship that they want, that'll be easier for people who truly want a monogamous relationship to find each other and not have to worry about cheating because they're with other people who actually want the same thing as them.
Mm-hmm. Can you let our listeners know what the Ashley Madison is? Because I just learned about this 10 minutes ago.
I knew it existed, but I wasn't paying that much attention to it until this just happened. It's a website where people could pay to join and allegedly find people to cheat on their spouses or domestic partners with.
It's like an affair hookup.
It's an affair site. Hookup site, yeah. Right. Like a dating site, but for people who are trying to cheat.
And apparently all the information was just leaked and everybody's names are out there and you're telling me you could Google that, huh? You can like look yourself up? Or
I don't know. There's a site. I haven't actually looked because, for one, I don't know a ton of people who... I'm just not that interested in the scandal.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, apparently you can go
apparently, look up. Yeah, and apparently people have been added to the Ashley Madison database without actually having...
There are a lot of fake accounts too.
Yeah, totally so.
So if you're just tuning in, this is Love in the 21st Century, and it is Julian, Emily Rose, Tammy, and Megan Manzanita Sullivan talking about the variety of relationships with an emphasis on polyamory. If you have something to add to the conversation, feel free to give us a call, 895-1114. You can message us on the Facebook page, and that's also, we'll do our best in order to get you on the show. So I do want to, before we cut to the break here soon, if we can talk, we talked about hierarchical polyamorous relationships. Could we maybe talk about a few other types of relationships that sometimes just get grouped into the poly lifestyle?
Yeah, so one of the distinctions that a general distinction that one might make is between like hierarchical versus horizontal poly relationships, which means basically that everybody has an equal voice and that anybody, like if I have a person I'm involved with and then I start getting involved with someone else, that person that came in later, their needs matter just as much. And when I say needs, I'm thinking of needs in terms of universal human needs, a la nonviolent communication, which I highly recommend as a communication resource for all relationships and especially non-traditional relationships.
I second that.
Yeah. but it doesn't necessarily mean that one person you don't spend more time with some people that you're dating or involved with than others, or that some people you don't have more emotional intimacy with because of time. But it just means non-hierarchical poly means that everybody's voice matters and that it's not like there's a pre-existing couple that's just dictating the relationship terms to a new person coming in. Like, there's this term unicorn hunting, which means when a pre-existing heterosexual couple seeks out the perfect bisexual woman who will complete their relationship and make everything perfect, but it's kind of frowned upon within some of the more solo poly or relationship anarchy community network, because a lot of people will, sometimes what happens is that there'll be a heterosexual couple that wants this third woman to join the relationship, but they want to dictate all the terms of that relationship to that person instead of treating them as an equal. And it, you know, some people think that's can be very disempowering. And why would somebody want to be in that disempowered position of having the terms of their relationship dictated to them?
Mm. Something that's coming to mind that referencing the hierarchical relationships, when if there's like a partner that's a predominant decision maker in the relationship. I recently met a therapist that is a, I was hoping she would join us tonight. She's based out of Utah, but she's a Burning Man. So she couldn't join us, but she was telling me about in her practice how she had seen primary partners that were women that were calling the shots in their relationships. And it wasn't necessarily done in the most ethical of ways, because there was a lot of deciding on the partner's parts where they weren't, their voices were not being heard. And if it were a man in that place versus a woman, then there might be some other questions being arisen. So I think it's interesting when we're thinking about the hierarchical standpoint of relationships that we also have biases when it comes to whether it's a man or a woman making those decisions. You know, like if it's a woman, we might be like, oh, she's empowered, or, you know, she's dominant, whatever. But if it's a man, he's abusive and controlling.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there can be a lot of questions that can be raised that maybe aren't getting as much light in that. And I wonder what your feelings are in terms of with the poly community.
Again, I think it just really varies, and I certainly can't speak for everyone. I know that some people still are very adamant that this hierarchical structure works for them. I wanted to give another example from media, of since you asked for different styles of relationships, and how I was saying that when I was a kid and I would read books and they're, you know, I'd want people to be able to just be with both of the other characters that they loved. The other night I watched this movie that showed, it was from the 80s, and I don't actually remember what it was called, and I think for its time it was very groundbreaking because it portrayed gay men in a positive light, and you know, showed this man coming out even though he was married and basically happily married, like his wife was like his best friend, but he realized that he had feelings for other men and ended up, their relationship ended up dissolving. And one of the things that I noticed was that she really wanted, the female character in the movie really wanted a son. She really wanted a child, and was so sad because she wanted to have a child with him. And I know of people who would have just had the child together, who, like, I know that there are people in the world where if there was a guy that wanted to be in a primary relationship with another guy but had a best female friend who wanted a child, might have a child together and raise the child together and be co-parents. That's becoming more popular, like the idea of being co-parents, that if two people both want children and they have a lot of trust and have a good friendship, they could raise a child together, and that child could have two stable parents, and they don't have to have a romantic or sexual relationship. And then all the other partners of both of those people can be like their aunties and uncles and just more support for that kid.
What's coming up for me as we're talking about all of this is the labels and the boxes that we're trying to shove all these relationships in. It's really interesting. It's like, it kind of reminds me of how, you know, if you're going to get into developing an art or a skill, you need to learn like the basics before you can move past them or grow beyond them. And so it seems like there's a lot of labels that we're talking about right now to sort of orient ourselves in these various relationship shapes. But ultimately, to let the labels sort of melt away and just allow people to be in different shape relationships without trying to define them too much, it seems.
And that's when you get into more what people are calling relationship anarchy these days, which is, or RA, people abbreviate it, which is the idea that all relationships are important and that we shouldn't necessarily treat our friends or our family or our lovers or the people we're dating any differently, that all of them bring something unique to the table, and to value all those relationships. Not necessarily equally in terms of time or emotional investment, but just in terms of when you're with that person, being present with them and acknowledging the needs that are met fully.
Okay, we gotta take a quick little break and come right back to it. We got some Jim Hightower for your listening pleasure coming right up.
Trump is said to be the biggest thing in American politics these days. Of course, that's mostly being said by him, then repeated ad nauseum by media gone gaga over his summer of self-worship. In essence, Trump is nothing but a figment of his own imagination, and his presidential candidacy is even less substantial than a figment. As columnist Maureen Dowd notes, his campaign is like a, quote, runaway Macy's Thanksgiving Day balloon. In fact, that image pretty well sums up the Donald. A huge plastic cartoonish balloon bloated with gaseous ego and floating precariously above us. The danger of Donnie, however, is not that he'll get elected, but that his racist, nativist, xenophobic nonsense is giving permission for others to spout the same ugliness in public and for other candidates to adopt some of his ugliest policies. For instance, by mindlessly and repeatedly asserting that immigrants from Mexico are rapists and murderers, the narcissistic TV celebrity has pushed this dehumanizing and dangerous stereotype from the darkest fringe of paranoid politics directly into the Republican race for president. Moreover, Trump has turned this vile bias into a vile proposal to revoke, quote, birthright citizenship, which is our Constitution's guarantee that children born here are citizens. This smug son of privilege wants to take that basic right away from the U.S.-born children of undocumented immigrants. Such rank political exploitation of children should be scorned and rejected as un-American, but instead, it's being embraced, not only by far-out GOP wannabes like Ted Cruz and Bobby Jindal, but also by some supposedly serious candidates, including Scott Walker and even Jeb Bush. This is Jim Hightower saying, Trump seems proud to be a buffoon, but his pusillanimous copycat rivals clearly have no pride at all.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
And we're back in Love in the 21st Century. Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by Chico Certified Farmers Market, announcing its market season. There are five markets throughout Butte County. Tuesday evening in Paradise at 6491 Clark Road. Wednesday morning at the North Valley Plaza. Saturday morning in Oroville at Myers and Montgomery Streets. And new this year, Thursday evenings in Paradise at 5720 Clark Road. Every Sunday morning, rain or shine, in downtown Chico as well. The Chico Certified Farmers Market, connecting farmers and food lovers since 1980. So we have Megan in studio, and we're talking about love in the 21st century.
Quite literally, the many shapes that love takes in this day and age.
Exactly. So where'd we leave off there? We're talking about how what everybody wants is just gravy, so long as everybody's consenting and all of that. We're talking about the wide variety of relationship types that are out there.
This is also a call-in radio show, so if you have anything that you want to add, then give us a call, 895-1114. I'm pointing at the disclaimer that the opinions and views that are shared on this radio show are not necessarily representing the KZFR or its board or any of its staff, and I feel impelled to let everybody know that, or necessarily anybody on this show. I mean, we're just having the conversation, bringing it up, and wanting to share with all of you some different perspectives. So, as said, you know, this is love in the 21st century. These lifestyles really preclude us very much so. Have been going on for a very long time, and we're just kind of having this conversation because it's not something that is often brought to the airwaves.
So far we've been talking about the different shapes that non-monogamy takes and things like that, but I know I already asked this once, and I feel like it wasn't fully answered. I really want to know your story, what brought you to this, to non-monogamy?
Yeah.
Were you ever monogamous, and did it not work for you? And how, you know, what's your story?
Yeah, I'll talk about that a little, being hopefully respectfully vague of anybody I've been involved with in my life. So like I said, when I was 15, I read that book, The Fifth Sacred Thing, that had what I thought were really great models of polyamorous relationships. And shortly after that, I sort of tried to get involved with somebody following that model, but without really having tools to communicate about it. And it blew up in my face because there is an assumption about monogamy in this culture that I didn't know how to negotiate with the people involved about. And then pretty much I've had a couple relationships that were definitely like, we were talking earlier about monogamish, like the idea of monogamish. After that, like the next two like serious relationships I was in, I guess, were pretty long term, like multiple years each one. And with both of those, there was like long periods of time where we were basically monogamous, but there was also periods of time where we were like, okay, we're going to try this open relationship thing and see how that works. And sometimes it was totally fine, and sometimes it made some pretty big waves. But I guess during those number of years, I was basically either monogamish or following like a primary partner style, because I still had this person who, you know, people perceived as my partner during both of those relationships. And then after the second one of those ended, I became very clear that I didn't want to be monogamish. I wanted to very much be non-monogamous. So the next relationship that I was in started, but still with a primary style where we said open relationship. But what ended up happening was that, and this is, I think, where I detour from that sort of hierarchical, really rule-based style, is that we were kind of following this model that a lot of people in the poly community follow, and a lot of people don't, where you have a primary partner that has, like, that you have to ask for permission before you start dating anybody else. And what ended up happening in that situation was that the person that I was with just wouldn't give me permission to date anyone I was actually interested in. And so I ended up de-escalating the relationship because of that. Well, I basically said, okay, I'm not willing to have this agreement anymore. I still am interested in you, and I still would like to be connected with you, but I'm no longer willing to have to ask your permission for who else I can date. And then because of that, he said that he wanted to end the relationship. And then since then, I've just very much been trying to more and more seek out people who specifically don't want that model of like veto power. And there's this joke that poly people say that you're fishing in a teaspoon of like trying to find other people who have, I've just more and more honed in trying to find other people who are already on the same page as me, instead of, you know, getting involved with somebody and then kind of starting, trying to undo that, unlearn maybe some of those norms that we have culturally. I've been more and more trying to find other people who are already really clear about what they want, and being really upfront and clear for myself as much as I can at the beginning of getting involved with anybody, that I am an autonomous being and that I'm not willing to let someone else dictate to me who and what kind of intimacy I can share with other people.
It's actually, I was just going to say that Julian was about to talk, and I was actually just going to say, you were talking, Julian, the other day about almost kind of like how we're all, there's this perception that that there might be a lot of compatible people out there, but in one way or another, we are all sort of trying to fish out of a teaspoon, because whether or not we're talking about different relationship shapes or just personality types, there are really only a handful of compatible, I don't know about handful, but you know, minimal compatible people, right?
You know what I found though, is that the more that I am really clear on what I want, the happier I am, whether I am involved with anyone else or not. And the more that I'm willing to say, I'm going to say no to getting involved with that person because I see that we have different values, the more satisfied I am with myself.
You know, on the front side of polyamory, it sounds wonderful. It's like, it's your own body. You can do whatever you want. You know, perhaps you don't need to check in with somebody, you know. But then on the other side of it is then living in integrity while living that lifestyle. You know, I've certainly heard stories and, you know, had my own personal relationship experiences where, you know, there's an agreement that there's an openness, but then the actual communication about things that have happened doesn't actually take place. And so then there's an agreement for openness, an agreement for sharing, but then the actual stepping up and basically having the stones to talk about what you've done and what you plan on doing and things like that can be like the harder part, like the follow through of polyamory, so to speak. Do you have any comment on that?
I think we have a caller, but maybe we can come back to that.
Sure.
We do. Hi, caller. Hello. Are you there?
Hey, guys.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Am I coming in nice and clear?
You sure are.
Sweet. So, yeah, that's an interesting conversation you guys are having. And I just kind of wanted to throw a couple of things out there and see what resonates. So the polyamorous idea is basically you have a relationship that's not, you're not solely with one person, you're not committed sexually, emotionally to one person, right? And so where this kind of is a hang up for me, because I feel like I could do that as well. And just to quell, wanted to have some sort of relationship, but didn't really like the person enough to go full on monogamous with. And I feel like, you know, the term like F buddies, funk buddies. I don't want to say it on the air, but that's every time I hear polyamorous, I always feel like it's just another way of saying having funk buddies. In other words,
okay. I think we know where you're getting. I think we know where you're getting with that. So, Megan, would you like to respond to his question?
Well, I guess maybe the question is like, what's the difference? And I would say for some people, maybe there isn't a difference. Especially at first, when people are first exploring, you know, I think for some people, there's this experience where they're like, okay, I'm not sure monogamy has been working for me. I want to try something different. And sometimes maybe it's easier at first to say, okay, I'm going to share some form of like physical intimacy, and it's harder to be vulnerable enough to share emotional intimacy with more than one person. And that, you know, at first that's the place it goes, because it's harder in some ways to be open with our hearts in that way that we in our culture have said is reserved for one person.
Okay, so thank you very much for your question. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. All right. Love you, Megan.
So, so awesome. That was a cool clarification. Thanks, Megan. So I just want to take a minute here. I think that you have an exercise that you wanted to do with our listeners.
Yeah.
Awesome. I'm really excited for that.
So I was talking about values, and I read a really great I want to recommend this as a resource for people who think that this might be a style of relationship that might work for you, is solopoly.net. That's solopoly.net. And I read a great blog post on there last month, which was something like the XYZ approach to relationship values. And this really helped me clarify some things for myself. And the exercise is basically to fill in the blanks on, because I value X, I will do Y, even if Z. And this was created by the person who runs that blog, Aggie Says. And so an example, it's basically saying, you know, it's easy to like live in harmony with our values when there's no sort of consequences for that. But what are you willing to do to stay in harmony with your values, even if there's a consequence?
Mm.
So, and that kind of comes back to what you were talking about, ethics.
Mm-hmm.
So I came up with at least two when I first saw this, exercise. One was, because I value honesty and transparency, I will tell the truth even if I'm embarrassed. Because I know that when it comes to these kind of discussions, I have experienced and still experience almost crippling embarrassment because it can be so uncomfortable to talk about these things, especially when we don't have models for it, because it all revolves around those dyadic relationships. So it's hard, you know, to bring up some of these subjects. But I realized that, of course, it's worth it to me when I put it that way. I would so much rather be embarrassed than lie to somebody. So I just, you know, when I find myself having a hard time bringing up something, I can come back to that. I agreed to myself that because I value honesty, I will tell the truth. And for me, part of that is not just not lying. It's also sharing information that I think might be relevant rather than just avoiding the topic, even if I feel embarrassed.
You know, I can't help but parallel sort of the relationship revolution that's happening in society now with online dating, the different forms of relationship, legalization of gay marriage, things like that, with the drug culture of the late 60s, early 70s. Because at that time, you know, it was like a very small group in the late 60s, and they were the first, the pioneers. And so we lost Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin. We lost these people because we didn't know where the boundaries were. Mm. We didn't know how to play it safe, so to speak. And in today's world, certainly those things are happening as well, but at least we know the dangers in a way that people didn't know or understand then.
Yeah.
And I think that history will look back on this time, wherever relationship types go in the future, we'll look back on this time as that trial by fire, where we as a society begin to discover and feel out our boundaries, and, you know, maybe get burned in ways that decades from now people won't be as susceptible to, you know, that kind of emotional hardship.
And in some ways, for people who are already in the poly community, that has been happening since the 60s as well, with the whole free love movement. Mm-hmm. You know, there, that was the first, in a way, like, openly time. I don't know, I wasn't alive then, of course, but as I understand it, there is, it was both a real opening, and also there was a lot of pitfalls around the way that free love was handled when it first became a culturally cultural option. And yeah, the lack of communication and lack of, I mean, of course, people didn't even know about safe sex, didn't even know the risks.
Well, like you said, the template relationship is changing. And, you know, we're some of the first generations to try to handle that and understand it and find our own personal satisfaction there. And, you know, it was not very long ago that these things weren't allowed to be talked about on the radio.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Maybe last year.
Maybe 30 minutes ago.
I proposed the topic 2 weeks ago and it was a no-go, so I'm just kidding.
Definitely 2 years before this. I mean, that's when this show started. And Julian, one of the things you're bringing up in, about the difference between the relationships of kind of free love and now is, I think, that also the depth of relationship. Because what we're talking about, and to kind of bring it back to where you started, Megan, was talking about values of relationships and really finding and looking for people that are in alignment with your values. And I think that when anybody really gets into that, of looking for somebody that's in alignment with their values, we're all kind of fishing in a teaspoon. Because
that's what I said.
So thank you for bringing that.
The smaller that teaspoon gets, I'm just saying. The older you get, the more stuck in your ways.
Becomes a quarter of a teaspoon, becomes an eighth of a teaspoon.
And then everyone gets divorced and it becomes a teaspoon again.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
And you die alone.
I'm totally
happy.
Kidding.
And then we have another show on divorce.
Do we have time to just share a few more resources?
Yeah, because there's something on this piece of paper that says kimchi cuddles, and I'm like, what in the world could this be?
Yeah.
Two of your favorite things.
Okay, so yeah. So I already said the resource of solopoly.net. Kimchi Cuddles is a webcomic that deals with poly, queer, and genderqueer issues, and through adorable comics. You can follow it on Facebook or on Tumblr, and there's a website, and if you just look it up, it's kimchi, like the food, kimchi space cuddles, like cuddling. And it's kind of a cool nonlinear way to learn about the issues that people in the poly community deal with, and reframe some of them. Like one is, there was this cute comic about how, oh, people think that it's all about jealousy, when actually it's often about the main issue might be scheduling. Like someone mentioned earlier, like, how do I have enough time? People, you know, people in the poly network who end up having a lot of partners or lovers, it's like finding alone time is more the difficulty than jealousy for many people. But it's just, it's cute and kind of shows it on a lighthearted but really compassionate level. And I also just want to recommend NVC, Nonviolent Communication, as a tool. And also the Ecstatic Living Institute, which does workshops on sexuality and relationships. And there's this tool that I learned from workshops with them called Desires, Fears, and Boundaries. And that's a really great communication tool to just think, those are three important things to express to somebody. What am I wanting? What am I afraid of? And what are my boundaries?
You know, we actually have like 5 more minutes-ish. Would you mind, I think that communication tool from the Static Living Institute is incredibly important, and what we're talking about here, when we're talking about relationships that are non-monogamous, I think the key to all relationships is really thorough communication. So would you mind just doing a little demonstration, like with us, with me, about what desires, fears, and boundaries looks like in practice, like just naming one of each or something like that, so our listeners kind of get a taste for what they can look up?
Yeah. Okay, so I don't know if I've actually used it in this context, but this might be a really cool context. Say that I wanted to ask somebody out on a date, but I might say, hey, I would really love to spend more time with you, and I'm wondering if you'd like to go watch a movie together and maybe hold hands. But I'm feeling nervous because, that's the fear, because I want you to know up front that I'm not looking for a dyadic exclusive relationship. And so my boundary is, that's kind of weird, but the important thing about boundaries is that they're always about you and not about the other person. They're not imposing a boundary on somebody else.
A boundary could be like no sex on the first date.
Yeah.
I mean, your boundary would be like, I'm not comfortable going this far or something like that, right?
And another boundary might be, I want you to know that I'm not available for a monogamous relationship. So, like, you can't expect that you're going to get me to do that. And if that's what you're looking for, then I'd rather you say no to this date right now.
That's really cool. And it simplifies that concept a lot. It's great.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's awesome. So that's you can find more information about that at the Ecstatic Living Institute. They do retreats at Harbin too, which is fun.
I've never heard of that either, so I'm learning so much today. Megan, is there any local connection that people can make that if they want to talk to somebody in the flesh here in town? Is there, you know, a network of people that are open to having these conversations, or really, that are navigating the waters of polyamorous relationships? I mean, I say that, and I'm thinking to myself, like, well, where do monogamous people get to do that? Because I mean, Lord knows, all relationships have their swells of issues. Yes, praise the Lord.
I mean, there's like couples support groups out there, right? I think. I don't know. Mostly through churches or something.
You got EmilyRoseCoaching.com. I'm just kidding.
As far as public resources in Chico, a while ago, somebody started a Chico Polyamory Facebook group that hasn't been very active, and that I think is kind of public, or it's like at least somewhat open.
Which is funny, all those words, in that the Facebook group is open, or the people in the Facebook group are open.
The Facebook group, I think, is
a closed group.
I don't remember. It's not very used. Honestly, there are not a lot of public resources. There's not very many counselors in town that even are versed in these issues.
I think, like a lot of things, if there's a type of social group you want to get involved in, go to things you're going to find those kind of people at, go to special events that are maybe left leaning, for instance, things like that. if you are open, you know, and seeking relationship of any kind in your life, exposing yourself to new social groups is always a good idea.
Mm-hmm. There, I mean, there's, if you go on like meetup.com, there's some groups in Sacramento and the Bay Area that I joined. I've never gone down to any other events, but they do exist. And they're like discussion groups. The important thing to be respectful about is that, a lot of the groups that exist like that, it's not necessarily a place to like cruise for people that you want to date. Like, that's an important thing to keep in mind is that, like the groups like that, it's more for discussion and like a support group for people who want a place to talk about just what it's like living this, you know, kind of lifestyle. And maybe you'll meet somebody that you have a connection with there, but it's not intended as a place to like find somebody that you're going to be dating. Well, unless it says that.
Speaking of NVC, I just wanted to do a quick plug because Jonah Richman does nonviolent communication trainings and workshops and things like that here in town. And I personally have taken a class from him and went through a month-long thing with him. And it was incredibly helpful. I actually went into it really... I don't know the word to use. I was... forcing myself to be open-minded. I think I thought that I knew, like, oh, nonviolent communication. I know how to do that. I've been doing that. I've been practicing, you know. But no, like, it was a really helpful thing to do. And so, so there's a nonviolent communication workshop of his actually on the 3rd, and then also on the 10th. And you can find more information about Jonah's classes. Actually, you can look up De-Escalating Emotional Intensity on Facebook. That's the one on the 3rd, De-Escalating Emotional Intensity. That's an NVC workshop that Jonah will be offering on the 3rd.
And we did get a call in while you were making that announcement about a counselor in town that does help relationships that are polyamorous in nature, as well as in the past has held polyamorous support groups. The caller wasn't sure if she still does it currently, but it's Adrienne Parker Moreno.
I was thinking about mentioning her, and I was just wondering if I should or not, since I hadn't asked if I could say her on the radio, but I'm sure she wouldn't mind.
Yeah, and well, I guess she's in the, you know, in the directory of counselors there, so.
So there are some resources. This is good.
So she's at least one resource in the community. If somebody wants to talk to somebody, they can Google her name, Adrienne Parker Moreno, and maybe get some more insight on how to approach that relationship style, or if you're already in that relationship style, maybe some tips on which direction you're going with it and how to have a healthy communicative relationship, which is, I think, what we're all trying to do when it comes down to it, is to have a relationship that we value, one that is in alignment with us, and one that's bringing us joy. So in whatever form you're doing it,
yes,
out there, we support that. And hopefully this conversation has been enlightening, has certainly been enlightening for me. So thank you, Megan, so much for joining us.
Thank you, Megan.
Thank you for having me.
Couldn't think of a better topic for a 2-year anniversary, right?
Yeah.
We did it. Yeah, let's talk about multiple relationships.
Happy anniversary, love in the 21st century.
That's, yes, right. So 2-year relationship.
Anniversary.
Anniversary relationship of the show.
Relationship to radio.
Yes, relationship to KZFR.
And we're growing. We're weekly and an hour long, where once we were every other week and a half hour, so... you know, basically we're
changing,
taking over the airwaves.
Because of you, listeners.
That's,
yes,
right.
Because you're into it.
That having been said, we're going to end with a song by Gaia Consort called The Perils of Poly. Thanks again, Megan, for coming on the show. And of course, Emily Rose as co-host and Tammy Wickman as co-host as well.
Thanks for saying my name right.
You got it, friend. All right. The Perils of Poly. I think. Here it comes.
She is Polly anymore. Oh, 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 we all together. Chasing everybody like their candy bird. Daniel was a player, Daniel stepped in everybody's bed, but now he's feeling guilty for the screwing that he did. Oh! He's moving back to Omaha, he's moving back to live with Ma. He says he's got religion and he's suing for the kids. Oh, 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 we all dream together.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next is Eco.